Hello, everyone. A potential disaster has been averted at Europe's largest nuclear power plant in just the past few hours. Ukraine's foreign minister, as well as an official at the Zaporizhia facility in the southeast, say there has been a fire after it came under attack from Russian forces. Russia now controls the site after heavy shelling in the early hours of Friday. The latest details in this report from Leah Harding.
A firefight at Europe's biggest nuclear power plant. And a fire that burns for more than an hour before firefighters can put it out.
As a result of strikes, there is a fire at the nuclear power plant. I repeat, as a result of strikes by Russian Federation forces on the nuclear power plant, a fire has erupted.
The town mayor pleading for the fighting to stop.
I ask you to come to your senses and immediately stop firing at the nuclear power plant.
Ukraine's president issues a dire warning of the consequences of the attack.
If there is an explosion, that's the end for everyone, the end for Europe, the evacuation of Europe. Only urgent action by Europe can stop the Russian troops. Do not allow the death of Europe from a catastrophe at a nuclear power station.
Firefighters were eventually granted access to the site and put the fire out.
Taking out a reactor's grid connection in and of itself won't lead to an accident, but it is the removal of one layer of defense for the plant. And in a war situation, there is a concerningly high chance that those other layers of defense will be stripped away as well.
The nuclear facility's six reactors are located near the town of Energodar, an area contested by the Russian military and its separatist allies. The nuclear plant has been the site of defiant resistance by ordinary Ukrainians, using themselves as human shields to keep Russian troops away. The reality of a nuclear disaster is all too real to these people. In 1986, the Chernobyl nuclear plant exploded, thousands of people dying of the consequences of radiation and leaving a huge area of the country uninhabitable to this day. It is one of only two nuclear energy accidents rated at the maximum severity, the other being the 2011 Fukushima disaster in Japan.
We're very relieved, and I think possibly, you know, what Japan has spent a lot of time doing over the last couple of years has been to put in anti-terrorism renovations at the various nuclear sites around Japan. So perhaps that's what's protected Ukraine in this instance as well.
The fire may be out, but the war around it rages on. Leah Harding, Al Jazeera.
Okay, here's Natasha Butler in Lviv now, near the border with Poland. This is quite something, isn't it? You know that strategic areas are going to be targeted in a war, but a nuclear power plant, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, extremely worrying indeed. And we have learned recently in the past few moments that it seems that Russian troops have seized control of that nuclear power plant. That comes from regional Ukrainian authorities. We're still trying to get more details on exactly what that means and whether or not it is confirmed. But a very tense and difficult night. Ukrainian authorities are saying that the power plant has been secured now, but only after many hours in which a fire was burning in that plant after it was attacked by Russian forces. Ukrainian firefighters were not able to get anywhere close to it at the beginning to put out the blaze because they were being fired upon by Russian troops. That's what Ukrainian officials say. They did finally, though, manage to extinguish the blaze, but only after some time. We understand that a generating unit had been hit in inside the plant, but as I said, the site now apparently safe, apparently secure, but condemnation really from many world leaders, Joe Biden, Boris Johnson, but also, of course, Volodymyr Zelensky saying that Russia was now using nuclear terror, that it was threatening not just Ukraine, of course, but also the whole of Europe. Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, saying that a radiation leak from this plant, Europe's largest, could be 10 times worse than Chernobyl.
Gosh. Natasha, I know it's a large conflict with a lot of things happening, but can you sort of run us through some of the other developments from other places in the country, Mariupol, for example?
Another, of course, very frightening, very difficult night for people across Ukraine, particularly in these areas where fighting has intensified in the east and the south. In the south, you mentioned that port of Mariupol. It is a key strategic port. It is located on the Sea of Azov. And residents and authorities are saying it is now a city under siege with constant Russian shelling. They are saying that water, heating, electricity supplies have all been cut. It is the winter here. It is extremely cold. And you can only imagine that is going to be an incredibly difficult situation for the people there as they are huddled in basement in the most appalling conditions. In the city of Kherson, another strategic port not far from Crimea on the Black Sea, that port was seized by Russian troops on Thursday, but we also understand from authorities there that they are talking about 3 days left of medical supplies, the same in places like Kharkiv under constant shelling. It is a humanitarian disaster unfolding. We understand that humanitarian corridors could be put in place by Ukrainian and after Ukrainian and Russian negotiators agreed on that on Thursday. But when that will happen, well, obviously for the people on the ground, not soon enough.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Natasha Butler, with the update from Lviv. Russia and Ukraine making some hints that there is some progress in the talks, both sides at least agreeing on the need for humanitarian corridors. As Natasha is saying, there's no indication on when they would be established to help civilians escape the war. The delegations met in Belarus for talks aimed at stopping the fighting. But even as the negotiators met, Russian forces continue to target major Ukrainian cities. Thousands are thought to have either been killed or wounded since Russia invaded more than a week ago. Here's Jonah Hull with the other developments.
Major Ukrainian cities are surrounded and under constant attack. This is Chernihiv, a city of textile factories, churches and monasteries. Its greatest misfortune, to lie on the route of Russia's advance from the north. In the eastern city of Kharkiv, too, people wake daily to scenes of terrible destruction and a fast-rising civilian death toll.
Look what Putin is doing. This is a war crime committed against the civilians, against the city of Kharkiv.
This city of 1.5 million people, most ethnic Russians, is being torn apart by Russian forces for no reason other than that it exists just across the border from Russia in Ukraine. And in the far south, Ukraine's biggest port, Odessa, is under threat too. Here, frantic efforts have been underway for days to build defences against a possible beach landing. Multiple vessels belonging to Russia's Black Sea Fleet hover on the horizon, including landing ships and support craft. Ukraine's military is very much still in this fight, reinforced by supplies of weapons from abroad. They've been able to apply real pressure to the Russian advance, slowing the progress of a vast column of armour, artillery and soldiers heading for the capital, Kyiv. Along its route, once sleepy commuter towns lie in ruins, a foretaste of what may be in store for Kyiv, the apparent aim to encircle the city and besiege it. From his bunker, under heavy guard, President Volodymyr Zelensky wages a relentless communications campaign, rallying resistance and calling in foreign support.
We have been saying this for a long time, that Ukraine is seeking for protections for our home soil and our own people. But such protections have not been provided. European countries assisted us with the waves of migration. However, we should discuss the guarantees that are required to protect our country, our home soil, and our people.
A second round of talks on Thursday between Russia and Ukraine at a location on the border with Belarus came with low expectations of a breakthrough, but a slim glimmer of hope that they're taking place at all. The Ukrainian government, meanwhile, has called for humanitarian corridors to be set up. And here in the western city of Lviv, volunteers are hard at work processing aid donations, medicines, clothes, food and other essentials for distribution across the country.
There is a humanitarian crisis erupting on multiple fronts, not just the internally displaced who've left everything behind in a scramble for safety across the country's borders, as more than a million have done since the invasion began, but also huge populations in urban centres, trapped, terrified, and desperate for help.
Civilian morale will vary now in a population increasingly terrorised. There'll be desperation in some places, determination in others. A spontaneous rendition of the national anthem at that aid station in Lviv. It is becoming ever clearer that the struggle is not just for personal survival, but for the survival of the nation as a whole. Jonah Hull, Al Jazeera, Lviv.
Right, let's discuss the military side of things with Pavel Felgenhar, defence and military analyst and columnist with the Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta, with us on Skype from Moscow. Thank you for your time, as always. I want to start by talking about the convoy, the now infamous convoy. We've got the latest pictures of it, which we're running 40 miles long and apparently stalled, not going anywhere. Have you got any thoughts on why that is? Why would this huge military column just be sitting there for 4 days?
Well, I believe they're just simply stuck in the mud, so to speak. The spring has come to these parts of Ukraine. The snow is melting, and so they're stuck to this narrow, winding road and can't venture out into the fields and spread out because even tanks get stuck in that mud.
Interesting.
And that's so they're in a pickle there actually, so it's a kind of, it's a traffic jam on the in sight of the enemy. Nothing good there. Of course, Ukrainians also can't go over those fields because right now the Rasputitsa, the spring thaw is coming. There's going to be more water in these creeks and rivers. There's going to be dirt. It was a big mistake for the Russian military to go in so late. They should have done so not in the end of February, but most likely in the end of January. They wouldn't have run into these problems. These problems are not so acute at all in the south. It's a drier place, but in the north, this is very seriously hampering the Russian offensive because you can't go off roads, and roads are bad in Ukraine. They're narrow, and there's not many of them. It's not Europe.
Okay.
That's in that respect.
Okay, that's very interesting. Okay, let's move on to some other issues then, and I think we have to talk about this targeting of the nuclear power plant. I said to our correspondent earlier, it is obvious that strategic facilities like power plants would be targeted. But to actually fire on a nuclear facility, is that not incredibly reckless?
Well, no, it's not just strategic facilities. It's specifically the nuclear power plants of Ukraine that have been, there have been orders to take them over, all of them. And so Russian troops are given orders to take them over. The Ukrainians didn't post any regular army units near these power plant we're talking about, so specifically not to have a big battle, but the local population did offer some resistance, mostly peaceful, not allowing the Russians in, and they got desperate and began firing shots. So, but in Moscow, they believe that the power plants are a very big danger, and of course they are, of any kind of terrorist, they believe, attack by Ukrainian nationalists. So to take them over, under control, all nuclear facilities, they began with the Chernobyl defunct former power plant, but also taking on the acting ones.
But to go back to the point I made, you're right. Taking over a power plant, sure, I can understand that as a tactic for Russia. But firing on it—it's a nuclear facility. You don't want. I mean, the risk for an accident, a terrible accident, has got to be very, very high.
It is. Well, but the troops were given orders. They hesitated, then they were given additional orders to go and do the job. And they are Russian soldiers. They followed orders. Apparently, the fire was not at the facility itself, but the adjacent training building that didn't really... this fire in itself did not that much threaten a nuclear disaster. But yes, this is a very dangerous thing. And the Russian commands given to the Russian soldiers are increasingly ruthless to use blunt force.
Pavel Falkenhauer, defense and military analyst, thank you for your time. We appreciate it today.
Thank you.